Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Hello. Hold on, Daniel.
All right. Hello. Welcome to see you're on.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome to Reflecting His Gifts. I'm Sissy Ellison, your host, and I believe that everyone has a God-given purpose, a gift or a talent, a testimony of grace that is meant to impact this world for the good and bring glory and honor to God. I also believe, as Romans 8:28 tells us, that all things, even the bad stuff, work together for the good of those who've been called according to God's purposes. God is famous for making lemonade out of lemons, giving hope to the hopeless, using the foolish to confound the wise, and even using our worst pain and losses to make us stronger, to teach us important lessons, and then to use us as beacons of light as we comfort others who may encounter the same trials. I'd like to start tonight's program with a scripture from James 1:27, because tonight's program is about orphans. The scripture reads like this: "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." I can think of nothing more heart-wrenching than a motherless or fatherless child. Children are innocent, defenseless, and in total need of the tender arms, the loving hearts, the guidance and provision of adults. They have no way to fend for themselves or provide for themselves. They cannot learn what they need to learn all by themselves. And yet there are multitudes of motherless and fatherless children in our world today, fending for themselves, fighting a battle they should have never had to fight, all by themselves. There are few causes that touch my heart quite as deeply as the cause and survival of orphans. In my own life, I've raised a child whose parents' lives were ravaged by addiction. He's my own grandson, and I know had I not been there to love him and provide security, protection, and provision for him, he might not be the wonderful and well-adjusted Christian young man he is today. I know firsthand about the emotional and material needs he had and what a joy it was to be able to provide that security and those needs for him. Children are very dear to my heart. Last winter, I was driving home after work listening to a Christian program called Family Life Today. The program was about orphans, and there was a man giving his testimony on the program. I'll never forget that day. The man's name was Daniel Kegwa, and he shared his story of being a child and an orphan in Africa. I cried all the way home that day from work as I listened to Daniel. One of my favorite sayings is, "Those who arouse your compassion are those to whom you've been assigned." And I knew in listening to Daniel that I had been assigned to his ministry today of rescuing and caring for orphans. Erica, Daniel's wife, was an orphan as a child, too, as a result of the violent and tragic genocide that occurred in her country. She was miraculously spared by God as well as Daniel because God had loved them, and he knew the future work he had for both of them to do. I managed to get in touch with Daniel and became friends with Daniel and his wife, Erica. Erica and Daniel are in the United States this week for the Christian Alliance for Orphans Summit at Long Hollow Baptist Church in Hendersonville, Tennessee, and they're joining us. Well, Daniel is joining us tonight. Erica, unfortunately, has become ill, and we need to pray for her, and she won't be with us tonight, but Daniel is going to share both their testimonies with us and tell us about the work they do in Kampala, Uganda, as pastors of the Sign of the Dove Ministry and directors of the His Embrace Orphanage. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Pastor Daniel Kegwa. Welcome, Daniel.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm so glad to be on this radio program today.
Yes.
I'm very much honored, and I feel honored to be able to be part of what the Lord is doing through your life and this program.
Go ahead.
As you have already introduced my name, I'm Daniel Kegwa.
Yes.
I came all the way from Uganda together with my wife.
Yes.
We have 4 biological children that the Lord has given unto us for now. And we have 3 other adopted children that we brought in our family to be part of our family.
Wow.
So part of our family, we are 7 children. Those are the ones we have. Though that's not the end of the people who lives with us. On top of that, we still have some other people who comes in the house each and every time.
Yes.
They just made it, felt it to be part of our family. So as I speak right now, even when we are here, I know that at home we have been told that there are 13 people in the house now.
13 people?
13 people right today. They have been there since last week.
Oh, my goodness.
They just feel like coming home and just being a blessing, you know.
Yes.
We just came out to be fathers, and we came out to be mothers of the nation.
Yes.
So because that is what the Lord has called us to do, so everybody feels blessed when they come in our house just to stay, just to eat with us, just to fellowship, and then hear the glory and the mercy of the Lord.
Yes.
So, yeah, that is how far the Lord has brought us.
Daniel, I would like for you to tell us about your early beginnings, because I know there was a passion ignited in your heart, and it's not just because you decided you wanted to help orphans. God has used the pain of your own life to reveal your God-given purpose, and I know our listeners would love to hear your story, where you were born and what your family was like and what your childhood was like. Tell us about the young Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about that. I'm so grateful to God who reserved my life, who rescued me at the point of my death. Actually, I attempted to commit suicide 3 times because I was raised up in a polygamy family. My father had so many wives.
Oh, my.
And we had so many siblings, half siblings.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot be able even to tell you right now how many brothers and sisters I have.
Mm-hmm.
So my father had different wives. And including all the wives, then my mother was one of them.
Yes.
A time came when I was about, things just happened up as we were just in our family at home, that there was some kind of, you know, grudges between some quarrels.
Yes.
Then I just happened to hear my mom and my father fighting in their own bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, I never took it to be a serious issue. So we used to hear my father beating my mom each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
So a time came that they had to separate that night. That is the night that I'll never forget in life. Remembering my biological mother packing up all some of her personal clothes and then leaving the house at night, going together with my young sister who follows me.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, I was young that I cannot even tell you how things went, but I cannot forget what I saw with my own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom went with my young sister, and then I stayed home with some of my elder siblings.
Yes.
Then a time came that they also had to run away because our father brought in a stepmom. Our stepmom mistreated us. She used to make us work like donkeys in the house.
Oh,
we never had any peace. We never had any joy. We never had any connection. We could work from 7 in the morning, and then we could go to bed at 10 in the night.
Wow.
She denied us food. She denied us everything. And then from there, my brothers, my siblings were older than me.
Mm-hmm.
Then they were able to run away out of the house. And the little Daniel, who was even left by the mother in the house, and then left by the elder brothers and sisters, I remained in the house alone. I had to remain in the house.
You were all by yourself in that house? How old were you?
Yes. My brothers and my sisters, after they left, then, yes, my stepmom was there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had to help her with each and every type of work. By that time, I was about 7.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do all kinds of work that would have been done by somebody who's like 20 to 25 years. I could fetch water from like half a kilometer away. I could sweep the house. I could clean everything. I could wash the dishes. I could wash her clothes. I could press them. I could sweep the yard. And I could dig. I could do all kinds of work. And then after doing all this kind of work, she could deny me. She did not give me any opportunity even to eat. The only opportunity I was given to eat was to eat from the trash, from the dustbin.
Oh, no.
That is how much my stepmom tortured us.
Oh.
Not until when I also felt like enough was enough.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had to run away from my father's house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go to my grandmother's place.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was a very poor lady. She really loved me, but she was very poor.
Yeah.
In our community, even the poorest in our house could call us poor.
Yeah.
My grandma had only one dress that she could put on during the day. She could put it off during the night, and she could cover me using that same dress. And then she could uncover me in the morning. And then she could put on that same dress to go and dig and do all other kind of work. I had no clothes. I had nothing in life. Then I stayed with my grandmother for about 2 years. So to about 3 years. And after 3 years, then I started realizing that life was pressing on too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like I could not live with my grandmother anymore. I felt that she loved me. But she was very poor to the extent that I could not even live with her, because even if I was in her house, but we could still stay on empty stomach. We could still live without anything at home. Then I had to start my own life at the age of 12. So that is how life became tricky. So by that time, I went to start my own life. I became a man.
You were going to take your own life? You were going to commit suicide?
I started renting a house.
Mm-hmm.
At the age of 12.
Mm-hmm.
I became a man at the age of 12.
Oh, I see.
Because I had to go and rent a 5x6 roomed house. I never had a mattress. I never had any clothes. I never had anything. I could just sleep on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
My small house had cockroaches, had rats. Had lizards, had all other type of insects and bugs that you have never thought of. But I had nothing to do because that was the only option that I had already taken. I stayed there in my small house for some time, and then I could do all kinds of work from each and every place, so that I was trying all my best to see that I could be able to raise money for my school fees. Because
I was going to ask, did you go to school and how did you pay your school fees? How did you do that?
I used to work. I did all kinds of work. I used to fetch water for the people in my community. I used to dig for them at the age of 12. I used to fetch water for them so that they could pay me money. Sometimes they could pay me food. I could come to your house. I work for you a whole day, and then you could give me some wages of food in the house. And then I could go back in my room, happy, having done all the work for you during the whole day. Because sometimes people could tell me that we don't have money to pay you, but we can only give you food to eat. So I could sometimes work for food. Then other times, some people could pay me at the age of 12.
Was there anyone to help you with your schoolwork? Did you make good grades in school, or were you a poor student?
No, by that time, actually, as I've already said, so it was out of my labor that nobody came up to support me, to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really did not see anyone coming up saying that he's going to be able to be of any support.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was just through whatever I did that I was able now to become what I really felt I should be in life. So that wasn't very easy also.
Yes.
Because life was very stressful.
Daniel.
Yes.
Yes, you've described a very hard and stressful life for a child. And in fact, I understand that it became too hard for you and you actually considered taking your own life. Will you tell us about that experience and how old were you then?
Right. Yeah, after all that, at the age of 12, then I went into the age of 13. At the age of 14, when I was in high school, I had then joined the high school. Then I felt like life was too much. I could not go on with life.
Mm-hmm.
Then the devil told me that one of the the solutions, what you only need to do in life is to commit suicide. I felt like I should do it. I made up my mind to commit suicide that day. It took me some time to make this final decision. But at last, I had to make the decision because I had no help. I had nobody to pick me up. I had no one to take me to school. I had no one to take me into his home. I had nobody to pay for my fees. Then I said, why should I suffer? Then I said, I'm going to commit suicide. I went to school. We used to leave school at 6 p.m. When I went to school, I made up my mind to commit suicide that day. I never went in my class that day because it was the day of my death. So I just went to school with my rope in my bag. Reaching at school, waiting for 6 p.m., I went under the mango tree where I had planned to commit suicide.
I never
knew that Jesus loved me too much, that he was not even late on that day.
Yeah.
I thought that all students had gone out of the school. But you know what happened? One student was at the school, and this one student saw me getting the rope out of the bag. And as I was going to put the rope, as I was planning to commit suicide right under that tree, having seen that everybody had gone out, he showed Richard. Richard saw me with this rope, and he realized within him that I was going to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Richard told me, Daniel, what are you trying to do? I told Richard while I was crying, I told Richard that I'm going to commit suicide. Richard told me that don't commit suicide, Daniel. Richard that I've been abandoned. I told Richard that I've been rejected in the family. I told Richard that I had nobody to love me, to take care of me. I told Richard that I'm one of the poorest in our community. I told Richard that I've done all kinds of work to get a way of surviving and living, but life is pressing too much. I told Richard that I'm going to commit suicide. Richard told me that, Daniel, don't commit suicide. He told me that you need Christ. When he told me that I needed Christ, I did not, take it, because even that time, I had already seen that Christ was there, but I was still suffering. So Richard told me that Jesus is going to be the solution for your life. He told me much about Christ, and I accepted Jesus under that mango tree where I was going to commit suicide from.
Wow.
That was the first miracle.
That is a miracle. I would say that God appointed a boy named Richard to intervene in your life at just the right moment. It seems you easily accepted the gospel of Jesus Christ and invited the Lord right into your life with no problem. But what happened then, Daniel?
Yeah, after Richard preached to me, I received Christ as my personal Savior. I told Richard that, where am I going to go now? Having received Christ as my personal Savior, but still the battle has not yet ended. I still have a struggle because I have no house. I have no home. Richard told me that, Daniel, let me take you to my father's house.
Mm.
Richard took me to his father's house. He spoke with him. I don't know what he told him. But at the end of the day, I was received in the house. I tell you, Sister Sissy, that when I went into this house, his father came out of the bedroom where Richard found him. And his father came out to find me because they took me into the house, and I never even went into the house because I had insecurity. I thought that I was also going to be rejected in the house. I thought that I was also going to be denied the chance of getting into the house. They told me to go into the house. I couldn't go into because I thought that they would not receive me. I was very surprised. Even this breaks my heart most of the times, and I cry. Hearing this man calling me that, Daniel, come into the house, and you are going to be one of the sons in this house.
Wow.
I could not believe that. That was the first time at the age of 14 to hear somebody telling me that, Daniel, you are going to be my son. That was the first time in my life to hear somebody telling me that, Daniel, we love you. Daniel, come and eat with us. Come and dine with us.
Wow.
Come and share whatever we have in the house. Come and be part of our family. They told me all this, but I never believed it because I could not even believe in myself that these people really love me. It took time to adjust and to get to know that they really told me the truth. That night, they told Richard, they invited us to dine, to eat, and we were all on the same dining. I had never seen that in my life. Then they told me, no, come and eat with us, because I thought that they were going to kick me away. I thought they were going to tell me to eat from another room or in the kitchen or somewhere else. But they told me, no, just come and be with us on the same table. Just come and share with us. That was my first time to see that in my life. I had never, ever thought that somebody could come up and tell me that come and eat together with us.
Wow, Daniel. What was it like that first night when you went to sleep? What were you thinking?
Oh, they told Richard that they had a bunk bed in our room, and they told Richard that, Richard, today you're not going to sleep on the bunk bed. Let Daniel sleep on top and Richard be on the bed that's under. I tell you, sister, that I went on that bed and I saw the heavens coming down that night. I could not believe myself that I was on the bunk bed for my first time in life at the age of 14.
Sweetheart. Oh my goodness.
I could not believe that I slept on a mattress. I slept in bed sheets and I had a blanket to cover me up for the first time. Wow.
Yes.
That was tough.
That
was Friday. Saturday was a very good day. Sunday we went to church. Monday they took me to school. And the father had a car. He drove me and he took us to school because we're in the same school and same class with Richard. And I saw myself being driven for the first time to be taken to school by somebody. That was my first time in life. Then I was like, God, how is this? Can this happen? I saw myself as a king. I saw myself as a prince. I saw myself as as a son who had been redeemed in a way that I cannot even explain. That's how life went on. But 3 months after being in that family, loved so much, something happened.
Well, Daniel, I want to stop you right there because this is a good spot to break away for a minute because this is a very, very, very important part of your story. We're going to pause for just a few moments now for a word from our sponsor to hear about the exciting Woods End series by Christian author Alexandra Clare. Stay tuned and we'll be right back. Hold on, Daniel. We'll be right back.
Okay.
The Woods End series by Alexander Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Shield as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. 2 books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Wood. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. also by Alexander Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts in practice. Find it all at alexanderclare.com. LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome back to our program. We're talking tonight with Pastor Daniel Kagwa. He's pastor of Sign of the Dove Ministry in Kampala, Uganda. He's here all the way from Kampala, Uganda, for the Christian Alliance for Orphans Summit in Hendersonville, Tennessee. And Daniel was telling us about his miraculous rescue and deliverance from being a child alone in his village, and how a Christian family had taken him in, and what a miracle it was to suddenly find himself with a bed and a room and somebody to drive him to school and to love him and provide for him. And Daniel, you were telling us that something happened. You had been there 3 months, and then what happened?
Yeah, after 3 months, the adopted father died. He had sugar diabetes, and then he had an attack. He died right away. We were in school. They told us that he had already died. I could not believe myself because I had just been received in this family. And then after receiving me, after that burial, they told us that the father was dead. I came back home asking myself where was going to be the end of my life, because after the 3 days of joy, then another calamity came into. So after the burial, usually in Africa, there is a culture of dividing the children. After the burial, the father died, so they had to divide the six children. I was the seventh. So the six biological children were all taken by different, siblings and next of kin, and the uncles and aunts and the grandmamas. They took them all. But after taking the six, then I had no one to take me. I was rejected right away because they never knew me. They did not have any clue about me. I had just joined that family. And I remember Richard, the one who led me into that family, crying out and telling his uncle, who drove his father's car, to take it. And he told him that, let us go with Daniel. Richard cried so much. And I still hear the voice of Richard crying and telling his uncle, let us go with Daniel. But his uncle told Richard that asked him, where do you know Daniel? He closed the door, and he just drove off, and they left me in the house alone. The devil told me that commit suicide, Daniel. I told you to commit suicide 3 months ago, and you did not commit suicide. Now the time has come. See that everybody has rejected you. See that everybody has left you here. You have been left in the house alone. Why don't you commit suicide now?
Oh,
I made up my mind to commit suicide again. I saw the rope. I looked onto the roof of the house, and I saw many opportunities of committing suicide again. I saw the rope from outside. I picked up the rope, and I was going to commit suicide because I had no one to take me. So the devil told me, you have been rejected. You have been abandoned. Even the people have left you here. Even Richard has left you here. All your people you thought to be loving and caring have left you here. Who is going to care for your life? So as I was going to commit suicide again, the spirit within me told me, Daniel, don't commit suicide, but go back to your grandmother's place. I went to my grandmother's place 7 miles away, went back to her, and I told her about my life. And then she received me. That was Friday evening. Saturday, Sunday, she saw me going to school, to church, and then she told me that she was not a Christian. She told me that she never wanted me to go to church. And then she told me that if I go to that church, I should choose either to be in her house or to go to the church. I decided to go to the church, and she kicked me out of the house.
She kicked you out for going to church?
Yeah, she kicked me out of the house. She told me that we have two options. If you go to that church, you'll never be in my house. And if you are going to be in my house, make sure that you don't go to the church. So I said, I have to go to the church. Then I went to the church. Then she kicked me out of the house. And that was another, the Lord made a way for me. Then I just want to jump into then, that was 1994. From 1990 to 1994, I was in ministry. 1994, I went to Rwanda. Mm-hmm. Rwanda had just come out of the genocide, of 1994 genocide.
So you
remember that
with
within
church.
3 months.
Was it a mission trip you went with your church to Rwanda?
Yeah. So because Rwanda had just come out of the genocide, 800,000
mm-hmm.
people had been killed using machete in 3 months.
Mm.
So as a church, we had to go to help the orphans. And I had the passion for the orphans. I just went to Rwanda as one of the team, people who were elected to go. And we helped by rescuing children from the camps, from the refugee camps, and then we brought them back into the country. And when I was in the orphanage center where I was working with James Robinson of Family for Life here in Texas, he was the main sponsor of that program in Rwanda. Then I saw this little girl called Erica coming. I'm the one who made all the recordings, all the registers, because I was my work was to register all the children, the new children who were always brought into. And here comes Erica. She told me all her story. But her story was very touching. She told me how her parents were killed. She told me how she saw her father being killed live. She saw me how she told me how she froze after she saw her mom being killed as she was trying to rescue them. She told me how she saw her brothers being killed. She told me how she lost each and everybody in the family. And
oh,
she was even looking with her own eyes. These are some of the memories that she will never forget in her life. She always talks about them. She always cries whenever she talks about the way her father was being killed. She says that soldiers came in her father's house. It was around 8 p.m. And then when the soldiers came, they entered into the house because they were living near the airport. And because they were so, you know, familiar and so they just came near them. And then their father told her, I mean the soldiers told their father that he was going to be killed. And then the father asked them not to kill them, that he should give them money. Though they even took the money, but still they killed him right away in front of all the children. Her mother tried to make them escape. The two boys were able to jump the wall. And as her mother was trying to escape, she was also killed right away while Erica was seen. And then she froze. She ran away. She never even knew how she went. She ended up going into the bush. She was attacked 3 times by the militias. And one time the militias got hold of her and they wanted to kill her. She had some scars on her hands and even in the chest. They wanted to cut off her head. And then, by God's grace, they thought that they had cut her. But she ran and she was full of blood. Then she fell into the dead body. And they thought that she was dead. But the Lord protected her. She was in the dead body for some time until late in the night. She rose up and went into the bushes where she hid for over a week. Then she was able to go to someone's house, home, because she was living in the bush for so many days. Then she felt coldness. She couldn't do anything. She had to look for a house. When she went in a certain someone's house, then after some days, when she was hidden there, the people in the community knew that this family had hidden someone of the other tribe that they were fighting against. They came in the night and they told this lady that if you know that you have hidden somebody here, we are going to break this house down, or else open the door so that you may give us the young girl that you have in the house. This widow, they had just killed her husband. She opened up the behind door, and Erica was able to run out of that place. And she went and hid in the bush for over 3 months, where she says that she even came across a leopard that the leopard never even ate her up. That is how we came, how that's how she came. She narrated all this story to me in the orphanage center as I was recording her biography and her records. And then I felt so much touched to see this young girl going through this type of life. I never knew that Erica was going to be my wife after some time. So time came that the orphanage center had no more money. And then they had to let other people, the children above 17 years, to go. Erica was let to go. And then after some time, we got married. After getting married, she came in my house and she told me that, Daniel, I will never ever be in the house where they are not orphans. This is where the passion came from. Erica started bringing in children in the house, orphans. And I used to tell her that, Erica, we are very poor. We don't have anything to eat. What can we do? What are we going to feed these children with? She always told me that God will make a way. But I love orphans. Erica loves orphans. She's a woman who is going to find children everywhere. She's going to bring them home. Even here where we are now in the U.S., she has been asking every child. You know, she's very connected. She brought these children in the house. 13 of them. We never had anything to eat. We never had anything to put on. But Erica had faith that God will make a way. And Erica will never leave a child by the roadside. She will ask that child. She will take in that child. As I tell you right now, we are having 52 children that we are taking care of. And out of these 52, Erica has been doing a very great work of getting, asking and researching and getting to bring these children, because she has a great heart for the children. She has that passion for the children. Right now, we have over 52 of them, and we have just opened up a school, which is a primary school for orphans, which we are now, we opened up that school this year, and the Lord is using us to transform the community through this kind of school where we want all these orphans to be assisted. Actually, the school has over 123 students. They are orphans. And we are now, that is what we are looking at. That's what we are taking care of right now at this particular time.
Daniel, why are there so many orphans in your country? What are the major reasons for all these children becoming orphans? What are the major factors?
It is the HIV, AIDS.
HIV, yeah.
AIDS, and then wars. You remember Uganda has been going through wars since 1970. And the Lord has just given us the grace. Just between 2012 to 2015, that is when Uganda has just had some peace. But we have been going through wars since 1970 until 3 to 4 years ago. But the Lord is putting Uganda to have some more peace than the last 3 years.
Yeah. Well,
so that is why Uganda has 2.6 million of orphans, and it is the responsibility of the church to take care of these children, support them according to James, as you said, James 1:27. If the church does not come out, nobody will ever come out. The government cannot come out because it is not the responsibility of the church, of the government, but it's the responsibility of the church.
So the poorest child in Africa doesn't have welfare or food stamps or those things, do they?
Come again?
Hello? In your country, like in our country, the children who are living in poverty can turn to welfare and get food stamps and financial aid, but in your country, you don't have that, right?
No, in our country, we don't have that system. And if it will be there, it may be there like 50 years to come, maybe. It is not something that we can even think of because our governments have no money. They are being sustained by other governments like USA, plus some other nations around us. So we don't have that program, and it cannot even be thought of at this particular time.
Right. Well, that is why you have to depend on the help of others and, you know, donations to help you. It's very obvious that God has had his tender and protective hand on both of you all of your lives, all of your lives. He had a very special purpose for your lives. Can you tell us about your church in Uganda? Tell us about the Sign of the Dove Church and how that came to be.
The Sign of the Dove Church is established in Zana. Zana is near Kampala, 5 miles. Kampala is the capital city. One of the goals, one of the calls that the Lord has given unto us is to take up for orphans and then and love them and then transform the community through loving orphans. And what we do now, as I said, is that because the church is in the community to transform the community, we are looking at the Sign of the Dove to be the community church that can transform lives of children. So what we do with this orphan in our community as a church is to care for, is to take care of their school fees majorly. That's one of the things that we look at. And we have also placed some of these children into the families, or the church families. Actually, our church family has over 51 children that they have taken into. But the church still pays the school fees and medical bills and some other few things. The reason why we do this is because we want the children to have their belongings, because each and every one of us was created to have a family. So we think, and we know according to the Bible, that the children must have a family. But even if these children have a family, they always need assistance. They always need school fees so that they can be able to go to school, because if you deny a child a school, deny a child a study, then you have denied him his future. So we really want to focus on the future of these little children, so that in the near future they can transform Uganda and the continent at large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Daniel, how can our listeners learn about your ministry? Do you have a website, and how can someone donate to your work?
Do we have a website which is still under construction? But as of now, I would refer each and everybody who may want to help and support a child. We are supporting our children at $35 a day, of which we think $1 a day can assist a child to go to school. And if anyone would want to spend that $1 a day just to a child, he or she can send the money to you in your name. Because you have been assisting the children in Uganda and our church at large, I think you may be the right person to be able to help us and do this work, as you have been sending this money to us. So I think you can still be trusted by the Lord to be able to assist us for those who may want to help.
What an honor and a privilege. Well, I definitely felt the Lord move on my heart the day that I was driving home, because I have a saying: those who arouse your compassion are those to whom you've been assigned. And having firsthand the experience of raising my own grandson, my heart went out to him when he was a little boy, because I was all he had at that time, really throughout his young life, to provide for him and support him. And children just moved my heart. And when I heard your story, Daniel, it just broke my heart. I can't handle thending of children, fending for themselves and being alone and having absolutely no one to turn to or to hold them when they cry or to feed them when they're hungry or to put clothes on their little bodies when they're cold and to help them. And when I heard your story, you know, I thought, well, in our country we have many ministries, and we have the government to help the poorest child is helped here, but there's really no one to help these children in Africa. And so I prayed about it, and God laid on my heart to make this my major ministry to support, and I've been doing that. And I'm not a rich person myself. I'm a poor person. I'm a single grandmother, and I've raised my grandchild. But I can tell you this, in giving to this ministry, God has taken care of my needs been miraculous things have happened along the way for me where, you know, small needs are provided for, and I don't even understand how they are. But God has a way of when our hearts give in the right spirit with great compassion and we're cheerful givers, God just somehow takes care of us. And God's heart is for the fatherless and the motherless orphans and for the widows. I know this because they're defenseless. They have nobody. And so my heart is so joyful. I told Daniel, I wish I were a million, jillion, trillionaire so that I could just pour out blessings on ministries like his and build that school and provide that money for those orphans. There are many other ministries that I would like to give to, but I would be glad to, you know, to help you in any way that I could, the way you just mentioned. But it's a joy and a privilege to be your friends and to help your ministry. I can't think of anything any more important.
Yeah, that's the great work the Lord has, you know, given the church and all other people to do. I sometimes blag out and tell people that you don't even know why the Lord gave you all the money that you have, all the life that you have. And somebody else needs your help. Because we are like Joseph when he went to Egypt. And, you know, when he went to Egypt, the Lord took him over there to be the life preserver for his family and for his brothers and sisters who were back in Canaan.
Yes.
And I'm praying that God may reserve some Joseph for somewhere who will be able to be in to go to Egypt and be able to remember his brothers and sisters who are suffering, who don't have anything, who really need money, who needs school fees to be able to become great doctors and teachers and pastors and evangelists of tomorrow so that they can be able to transform the world upside down. Because if these children are denied the chance of going to school, then they are the children who are going to be breaking into people's houses tomorrow. They are the people who are going to be going into drugs. They are the people who are going to be prostitutes. They are the people who are going to become rebels of other countries and fighting and killing and doing all other things. But if we could give these children an opportunity to go to school, that is life that you are investing into them. That is the foundation you can give each and every child on this planet. Give him or her a chance of going to school. If he's given that chance, if she's not denied that chance, she's going to transform this world upside down. That is what we believe. That is why we do whatever we do. We are here to transform the lives of those who cannot speak on their behalf. We are advocates to speak on behalf of those who have no chance to speak on their behalf. We would just want to encourage each and everybody that if God can be able to help you and you save $1 per day to be able to assist one child, at least, then that will be a great opportunity. That is life invested.
Yes.
And that is something that this child and God will never forget in life.
And you know, Daniel, what is very small to us is very big to children there, because, you know, you said $35 a month would pay the school fees for a child. Well, it's so much more here in our country, but over there, that's a pretty good amount of money. And so it doesn't matter, you know, I can't give a lot, but to me it is a lot. It's a whole lot for me, but every time I do, I think, oh God, let this be some little child's shirt or pants. Let it be their school book or something that they eat. And I just love to go to sleep at night and think about some little child having something that they couldn't have if I hadn't done that. And I don't want to be talking about myself giving to anybody. I'm not doing it to brag or boast or anything. I'm just saying that the best feeling that we can have in our heart is to go to sleep at night and know that we've made someone's life better, someone who couldn't do it for themselves, that we've had some small part in providing some kind of comfort or relief for them. And, you know, Daniel, all I can think of is that God is sure something, because he used the worst pain of your life to raise you up and to give you compassion. And, you know, you had a choice about that. You could have become bitter. You could have turned away from God. You could have not accepted God. You could have blamed him for a lot, but you embraced Jesus Christ. And in embracing Jesus Christ, his love was shed abroad in your heart, and you have used all your pain to reach out to these little children, as well as Erica, and you are making a difference in this world. And I just want to say I love you both so much. I've never met you. I've just seen you in pictures, and I've talked to you like this, but someday I have a dream that I'll come there, and I'll be able to, it's going to make me cry, put my arms around those little children too.
Mm. Yeah, we pray that God may make up a day, one time that you may come and hug them and just love on them and just play with them around and just kiss them and hug them.
Someday I'm going to.
They really need that kind of comfort. They really need that kind of love. And
yes, they do.
Yeah.
They do. Mm-hmm. I know my grandson the other day, you never know how they really feel about what you've done for him. But as he's grown up into a mature man, he realizes, how much I was there for him. And the other day he turned to me and he said, Nana, he calls me Nana. He said, Nana, I don't know where I'd be if I didn't have you. I might have been dead. I might have been a drug addict. I know I wouldn't have been who I am today. And that's what happens when we love the defenseless little children who have no one. I dare say that if all the little defenseless, unloved children in the world had that kind of love, that there would be no more gang members and no more little militants following Joseph Kony and Boko Haram around or anything like that. Those are probably very unloved children who have become misguided and feel they belong somewhere, so that's what they do. But love is what makes the difference in a child's life.
Right. Actually, in a few minutes, this is what is happening now in Uganda. I've just not been able to share more about that, but they are planning and plotting. Some many children have been rescued out of the forest. You might have seen this a few weeks ago in Ugandan news that children have been rescued by the government.
Yes, I pray for that every day, Daniel.
They have been taken into the bushes and they have told them that they have been suffering because the Christians have been torturing them and denying them their rights. So we are saying, if the church, if somebody can rise up, we can still rise up and help these children so that they are not taken into the bushes to be lied, to be deceived, to be told something that is not even right, because they have been telling them that Christians are hating them and they should go and be trained so that they could join those kind of evil groups of the Boko Harams and some other people. We are praying that it may not be on our children. We are praying that it may not be on the orphans. We are praying that those vulnerable ones may not be taken by this kind of wind, because they are looking for money and they are seeking for love and they are seeking for they are trying to make their own way. So if they find this child being desperate, rejected, abandoned, he or she can easily be taken into those other evil groups. That is why we come out and say, let somebody be an advocate. Let someone be out and support this one child with at least miss one meal of $35 and help this one child a month. At least miss a meal of $20 and just give it out to this one child. At least for this, give a future to this child. Yes. You never know how his or her life will be in the near future.
Children will always choose love if it's offered to them. But if it's not offered to them, they will choose that kind of angry, hostile Boko Haram mentality because it's offered to them and that's all they have. Children will choose whatever is put before them when they have no one. And so we have to make sure that they're offered love and that they're offered support and a fighting chance to come up out of that orphanhood, that loneliness that they're in, so that they can become strong and that they can become Christians and get an education and make a difference in this world. And that's what Daniel and Erica are about. That's what they're doing. They will never forget how it felt to feel what they felt as orphans, and they have turned around and not only looked back over their shoulder at these suffering little children, but they've extended their arms, their home, their money, their prayers, everything. And I would say tonight to anybody listening that, you know, orphans are a very worthy ministry. And if you feel God speaking to your heart, that is something that you need to consider doing. And if you can't do that, oh my goodness, pray for orphans, because I'm sure prayers were keeping Daniel and Erica alive somewhere in this world. Someone was praying, and angels were all around them, obviously, and they were miraculously delivered and saved and rescued and doing the work they do today. And Daniel, I'm so inspired by you. You are a hero to me, and Erica is too, and I love you so much. But we've come to the end of another wonderful program, and I know you have all been touched deeply by the testimony of Daniel and his wife, Erica, and by the work they do today to help other children who are orphans. I encourage you to become involved in their very important work and to pray for them as they go about this work of rescuing many motherless and fatherless children. If you want to know more about their ministry, I'm on Facebook. You can get in touch with me there, or my email is rivergospel@yahoo.com. You can contact me that way too. But Daniel, I want to thank you tonight for taking the time during this Orphan Summit in Hendersonville to spend an hour with me and talk to me about the work you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, too, for the opportunity that you have been given, and it's such an honor to be hosted and then to be part of what the Lord is doing through your life, and I've been blessed so much. Thank you so much.
All right, Daniel. And be sure and join us again next week for another inspiring guest. Till then, may God keep you in his tender care. Good night, Erica. Good night, Daniel. And good night, listeners.
All right, good night to you.
The Woods End Series by Alexander Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Shield as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Wood. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexander Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexanderclare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.